Okay, we're back in Parshat Vayitzeh. And what I want to start off this piece with is actually one particular item. And this particular item appears at the very beginning of the Parsha and actually strings itself through the entirety of the Parsha itself. Can anybody think, it's a tough question, what item, what object appears all the way at the beginning, stops in the middle, and concludes with what physical object is a significant object in the course of Parshat Vayitzeh? What?
A rock.
A rock. Okay. How does it appear in the text?
So, Yaakov puts it under his head when he goes to sleep.
Okay.
And then he has to roll it off the well.
Okay.
Then...
does a rock appear at the end of the Parsha?
Yeah. It says... I'm not sure if it's referring to a rock, but it says... in Nun Aleph, Pasuk Nun Aleph, it says...
what parak?
Lamed Aleph. Vayomer Lavan LeYaakov, Hinei HaGal HaZev, Hinei HaMatzeva, Asher Yariti...
go back to Mem Hei, you don't have to go that far. Go back to Pasuk Mem Hei. What does it say in Mem Hei? Oh, so yes, that Gal Eid, that monument that's put up is made out of ebon or stone. So 100%. So yes, Eliora, you're 100% correct. Right on the first try. Ebon is a very significant concept in general. This was all from last time, so we can actually take it off. Ebon is a very significant concept in general, and we're really going to spend most of our time today breaking down the significance of the ebon in this parsha. So we have ebon, a stone or a rock, which the three places, two of which Eliora pointed out, the first time that the ebon appears, it appears prominently in the opening paragraph in Perek Chavchet, Sukim Yud through Chavbet, when Yaakov comes, Vayit from the very beginning, Vayit Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, Shava Vayilech Charana, Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva, he goes to Charan, Vayifka Makom, he comes to again that Makom, he comes to Makom HaMikdash, Vayalan Sham, he sleeps there, Kibah HaShemesh, Vayikach Me'avneha Makom, Vayasem Mirashotav, he takes from the stones of the place and puts them under his head. And then when he wakes up in Basuk Yudchet, Vayashkin Yaakov Aboker, Vayikach Et HaEven Asher Sam Yerushatav, he then takes that which rock which was under his head where he had the dream, Vayasim Otam Matzeva, Vayitzok Shemen Al Rosha, he goes and makes it into a monument, and he pours Shemen, he pours oil onto that stone. Vayikrashim Makom Ahu Beit El, V'ulam Luz Shemair La Rishona, he calls this place now Beit El, and its name was originally Luz. So, and it gets mentioned one more time, Pasuk Chavbet. The second time it comes up, also mentioned by Eliora, is in Perek Chavtet, Pasuk Zayin, really Chet, but Zayin is the beginning of the story, when Yaakov goes to the well, where he meets Rivka, where he meets Rachel, and we've talked extensively about the concept of what wells mean, how significant wells are, that wells keep popping up over the course of the Bereshit, always to indicate when we're drawing out, right, so you do from a well, you draw from a well, when we're going to be drawing out new waters, we're going to be drawing out new things that are going to be necessary elements of Kal Yisrael, so we're always going to be stopping at a well. The most significant relationships keep on ending up happening at wells. We're drawing out new levels, new layers of what needs to be used to produce Klal Yisrael. So we get to that well, and it's going to be one of the most significant relationships that we're going to have. Vayomer, Hein Or Hayom Gadol, the shepherds that are there say that the day is still... Yaakov says to the shepherds, the days, there's still a lot of time to the day. Lo Ite Asef HaMikneh, it's not time to gather in all the flocks. Ashkwat, Zonu L'chu Roi, I don't know where, you know, this. I guess this falls into... He assumed that they would take it well. I don't know where, just as he wanders into this place in Arian Chuslar, he's able to just go and start telling shepherds who he's just met for the first time what to do. But he's like, what are you guys doing lounging around? Go and, you know, go and give water to your flock. So they answer him. They don't say, go away, what are you talking about? They actually give him a legitimate answer. But Yamru, Lonu Chalad, Asher Yisvu Kolad Darim, Vikalalua to Evan Mial Pia Be'er, Vishkinu Atzon. We need everybody actually to gather together, and not everybody's here, in order to get the Evan off the well, in order that we can then open it up to give the flock to drink. So who ends up being able to remove that stone to allow for the water to be drawn?
Yaakov.
Right, again, just use your minds to think about the layers that go into that sentence. Okay? And that's in Pasuk Yud at the very end. Vayigash Yaakov, Vayigalat Evan Yal Pia Be'er. Yaakov goes and he removes the stone from the Be'er, from the well. Vayashket Atso Etzlo Navan Achi Imo. And he gives to drink the tzon, the sheep of Lavan, who he doesn't know, who he already does know it was Lavan. Lavan, the brother of his mother, meaning his uncle, Lavan. Good old Uncle Lavan. We'll be getting into him soon. So that's time number two. So the last time, which Marissa pointed out, is all the way at the end of the Parsha, after we go through the story where he goes to Lavan, and he marries Leah, and then he marries Rachel, and he produces 11 of the Shvatim. And then he runs away with them. So he gets, there's the final confrontation that he has with Lavan on his way back into Eretz Yisrael. And at that place, they sit down and they are korate a brit. They make a covenant between the two of them, right? It's not necessarily the most friendliest of meals, right? Depending on how friendly your family is, it could or could not look like your sedarim are going to look like, right? Where they're now sitting down and saying, let's go and break bread. It'll be really fun. And we're going to make sure that nobody crosses line ever again. So they say, "Vata lecha nichrata brit ani vata va'aya le'ed b'ni u'b'necha." We're now going to cut a covenant between the two of us, between me and you. Va'yikach Yaakov even v'yirimeha matziva. Yaakov establishes the stone and even and makes it a matziva again, makes another monument. Va'yomer Yaakov la'chiv. Liktu avanim v'yiku avanim v'yesu get gal v'yolchu sham al hagal. We're going to go and eat there on this gal. They go and they take the stones and they make a monument and they actually eat on that monument and call it gal eid. And very interestingly, Lavan manages to sneak in non-Hebrew into the text and calls it Igar Shahaduta. But we'll talk more about Lavan next time. And that's where they're korate that brit, that they're not going to have anything between the two of them anymore. But that also happens with an Evan. Yes.
Okay, so what do you mean monument, like idol worship? Like, what is he doing?
It'll play into what an Evan is in and of itself, but somehow this is going to be a continuous testimony to something which happened at this place. When we say there was a covenant, what's the proof that this covenant happened? We can go and look. There's that monument that stands there as a testament to the fact that this happened at this place at this time. But certainly not as a place of idolatry. For sure not. Okay. So we want to understand what this concept of Evan is and why it plays such a significant role. So we have to come back. We're going to be spending our time on Evan. Now, in terms of Sefer Bereshit, from the beginning of Sefer Bereshit until now, we've been focusing on one thing. And in Parsha Vayitzeh, the entire book as a whole shifts in terms of its tone. What have we been trying to do, which we've talked about extensively even this semester, what have we been trying to do from Bereshit until now? What has it been a process of? What's been happening from Bereshit through Parshat Toldot? Throw it out. What do you say, Rebecca?
Wait, no. Okay. Can you repeat your question?
Up until now, from Bereshit until now, what have we been doing in Sefer Bereshit and been talking about extensively? So Liora again says that we've been going through a process of sifting. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, right? We were slowly but surely sifting through to find the pearl, which is Avraham Avinu. And then from Avraham Avinu and through Toldot, we were selecting out from within the system the negative or impure elements. That process of selection through to the final selection in Sefer, in Parsha Toldot, is what embodies and encompasses the entire first half of the Sefer, of Sefer Bereshit. What then is the goal of the second half of Sefer Bereshit? Where are we moving to? What's now going to happen? What is this the beginning of the story of?
Producing a nation.
Producing a nation?
Yeah.
Or, you want to rephrase or say this? What were you going to say?
I was going to say that it's been a focus until now on like kind of like minimizing, like reaching a specific point, and now you're going back to maximizing.
Excellent, or expanding. Right. Two different facets of the same thing. Right at the beginning, we were moving to narrow down and to find that one unique element, and now we're going to allow that element to express itself, to expand, to produce the 12 Shvatim. We're no longer selecting out. We're now producing the 12 Shvatim. We started with Bereshit. We started in Gan Eden, where there is a ta'arovet of Tov and Ra, where Tov and Ra get mixed up. We spend the first half of Bereshit sifting out the Tov from the Ra, until we now can finally try to bring the Tov to its fullest expression. So starting with Vayitzeh, we come into a new stage, and it's the spreading of Klal Yisrael, the spreading of Yisrael, who himself is the prototype, meaning Yaakov, what's Yaakov's other name?
Israel.
Israel. So whenever we're talking about Yaakov, we're also talking about not just Yaakov the individual, but we're talking about Israel in terms of the prototype for all of Klal Yisrael. We're now seeing the process of the spreading out, or the branching out of Klal Yisrael as a whole. Where does the actual spreading out of Yisrael, the prototype individual, into a nation really happen? Where is this process going to continue through? Where Yisrael, who is now producing the Shvatim and creating a reality of Klal Yisrael, when is that reality of Klal Yisrael really going to get to be produced or birthed, if you will?
Matan Torah.
They who were birthed received the Torah. But what's the moment of their birth? Where's the moment of them actually becoming Klal Yisrael?
Mitzrayim.
Excellent. Meaning Matan Torah is the conclusion of that process, to be sure. That's why Pesach is going to be linked to Shavuos through Sefirat HaOmer. Right? So that's 100% true. That's the end of the process. But the moment of birth of Klal Yisrael, and we'll be talking about this extensively next semester when we do Sefer Shmot, that Sefer Shmot is going to be the Sefer where we're going to see the birth and development of Klal Yisrael as Klal Yisrael. But there's no Klal Yisrael in Sefer Bereishit. That's born in Yetziyat Mitzrayim in particular. And we see this explicitly in terms of Sefer Shmot being the final conclusion, culmination of the process of Yaakov / Yisrael, the individual, not just producing children, but then producing what it becomes, the entirety of the nation, really come to its closure at the very end of Sefer Shmot, which we read only 2 weeks ago. If you take a look at the very, very last pasuk of Sefer Shmot, it uses a unique phrase which is not used very often in Chumash. If you have a full Tanakh in front of you, take a look at the very end of Sefer Shmot, or the very end of Parshat Pekudei, Perek Mem Pasuk Lamed Zayin, where at the very end of the Sefer, the Mishkan is built, and Gvod Hashem Aleihat HaMishkan, the glory of God comes and fills the Mishkan. And it says in Perek Mem Pasuk Lamed Zayin, "Ve'im lo yaseh." Excuse me, Pasuk Lamed Chet. Ki anan Hashem al Mishkan Yomam. The cloud of Hashem was on the Mishkan during the day. Ve'esh shi'alai labo, and the pillar of fire was by it at night. Le'inei kol Beit Yisrael. Very unique term, Beit Yisrael. Bechol maaseihem. So what Sefer Shmot goes and attempts to and succeeds in accomplishing is not just creating Klal Yisrael, but creating Klal Yisrael as a bayit. Beit Yisrael. What is a bayit made out of? Literally. Stones or avanim. Right? The stones are the building blocks of a bayit. As we said before in a different context, but totally fits in this context as well. Avanim habonim et habatim. We were talking about how, according to Sefer Yetzirah, each letter is a stone, and each word is a bayit. Right? That uses the phrase avanim bonim et habatim. It's the stones that create the house. The formation of the avanim that will become Beit Yisrael, that's the second half of Sefer Bereishit. The second half of Bereishit is the forging of the avanim, the stones that will create the bayit of Beit Yisrael. So much so that we see the Sefer Bereishit is divided into two halves, like we've been talking about. Right? What number parsha is Parshat Vayitze in Bereishit? Seven. Out of how many?
12.
Meaning it's literally the dividing point. The first six parashot, the first six parshiot through toldot are one specific unit of, again, that sifting out process. And then from Parsha 7, literally at the halfway mark on, that's going to be past the selection process, now the building up of the Avanim of Klal Yisrael. Second of all, it's very interesting, Ari Levy pointed this out, Derech Chayav Shari, he wasn't able to find a source for this, but it certainly rings true, which is, if the goal, what then is the ultimate goal of Sefer Bereishit?
Oh.
Is that a legit fire alarm?
No, second it was.
It's an illegit fire alarm. What is... Close the door either way. What is What is then the ultimate goal of Sefer Bereshit in terms of where its culmination point is going to be based on what we just said? It's to produce what? Everybody come back in. It's okay. The goal of Sefer Bereshit is then to, goal is to produce what?
B'nai Israel.
Not B'nai Israel, not Beit Israel. Produce what? The founding, the founding stones, those building blocks. What are the who or what are those building blocks? The Shvatim are the 12, meaning Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Binyamin, v'chule. Where those are what we're trying to produce. How many of them are there?
12.
So it's interesting that there are 12 parshiot in Sefer Bereshit. Perhaps I'm indicating by its very structure that that which Bereshit is trying to reach and culminate with is the production of those 12 elements, which are going to be the primary elements of Klal Yisrael.
Can I ask a question? I just want to know, is this all... in the symbol text, or like this is from the Farshim and stuff like that. Like, what's the source of this?
So that I said again, that was suggested by my rabbi, and he was open about the fact that he was suggesting that idea in terms of the breakdown of the number of parashot. In terms of the fact that we're moving to too clear, I mean that's just a reading of the text up until meaning there is no selection past the removal of Esav and the production of Yaakov. That's just a fact. And that it's at the halfway mark speaks for itself. So all of this, we've just been explaining the text on a text level, the concept that might even be inherent in the structure of Sefer Bereshit, so that he suggests on his own. Everything else will be linked either to Psukim as we go forward, or Midrashim, which all of which are in front of me, and we will quote inside.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah, Tzipi.
Did your rabbi by any chance attempt to correspond them by Parsha per person?
No, but I will... you know, to pass that along to him. That's a fascinating concept. Interesting.
In order, but then I was thinking it's probably like going to not be in order, and then there's going to be some reason for why it's out of order.
First, we have to figure out if that's a thing, then we'll go from there, but one thing at a time. But that's a very interesting concept to be put in on. You could try it, see what you come up with.
I've already started.
I'm saying, see what you come up with, yeah.
If the 12 Shvatim represent stones, then what do the Avu represent?
The avot that we've been talking about, the avot is, are laying the foundation, are, if you will, the foundations versus the stones, maybe, if you will, if that's a nice way of thinking about it and keeping with the analogy, meaning there is no shevet of Avraham Avinu, there is no shevet of Yitzchak, there isn't even a shevet of Yaakov, it becomes Klal Yisrael, which all come from his descendants. They're really setting these what was right over here, the building blocks. Or, if you will, let's say it differently again, the foundations upon which those stones can then build up the bayit of Klal Yisrael. I think that's a really beautiful mashal. I think it should hold through, if I were to explain it that way, yeah. Okay. So since Yaakov is going out to Galut, is going out in Parshat Vayitzeh, that's Vayitzeh means to go out. Since he's going out to create Avanim, it's not surprising that the Parsha itself revolves around Avanim. But let's go deeper and get into what Avanim are themselves. Right now we've talked about what the Avanim represent, what the Avanim are connected to. But what is an Evan? What is a stone? Right, and as we even mentioned before about Avanim Havanim Tabatim, how do we even look structurally at the word, and what does that teach us about the nature of what an Evan is? So let's take a look at a place where, in Bereshit, there's actually a connection made between the concept of Evan and Klal Yisrael itself. That comes in one of the brachot from Yaakov to one of his sons. In the bracha in Parshat Vayichi, we'll open up together, the bracha in Parshat Vayichi, from Yaakov to Yosef, has many critical pieces to it, which we will definitely be speaking about both at the end of Sefer Bereshit, and actually reaching back to it when we start off Sefer Shemot at the beginning of next semester. But these are going to become central psukim to understanding both of those pieces. If we take a look in Perek Memtet, Pasuk Chafbet, watch the Lashon here in the Bracha from Yaakov to Yosef. Perek Memtet, Pasuk Chafbet. He says, Ben Porat Yosef, Pin Porat Le'ayin, Banot Tsa'ada Aleshur, Ve'imaru V'rabu Ve'yistimuhu Ba'alei Chitzim, Pasuk Chafdalet. Vateshev Be'itan Kashto, And again, these are words that we're going to spend a lot of time unpacking. He sits with his bow, like bow and arrow, pulled back. He holds it strong. Vayifozu zroe yadav, midei avir Yaakov, misham roe even Yisrael. From there will shepherd the even of Yisrael.
From there will what?
Shepherd. It's all fluffy pesukim because it's the flowery lashon of brachot. We're not going to unpack it all now. I just want to focus really on the words Eved Yisrael for right now, but when we get to Vayechi, when we get to Shemot, we'll be spending a lot of time on this pasuk. Misham ro'eh Eved Yisrael. If you have in your Tanakh in front of you, which hopefully you don't, because hopefully you have a Tanakh and it's not going to be in a Tanakh, but if you don't have a Tanakh and instead you have a regular Sefer Bereshit or Mashu Kazeh, if you take a look on the words Eved Yisrael, Unklus translates Eved Yisrael as follows. I'll put it up on the board. He translates Eved as Avhan Ubinin Zara Yisrael. This is how he translates the word Eved. How is he translating the word Eved? And then Aramaic, what's Avhan Ubnin?
Fathers and sons.
Father and his sons. That's how he translates the word Evan into Aramaic in his explanation of the verse. Rashi picks up on that. Let's take it one more step further and then we'll pause. Rashi takes it one more step, and if you have Rashi in front of you, which is more likely, although still unlikely, if you have Rashi in front of you, he says as follows, again on the spot. Evan Yisrael, Lashon Notrikun. It's somehow a joining together of two words, of the words Av and Ben, clearly taking that from Unklus. Avhan Ubanin, he says. Yaakov Ubanav. If you take the word Evan, it's actually a composite of these two words, Av and then Ben, with it merged together, you drop one of the bets. And this isn't just some nice fort, meaning this is Unklus, this is Rashi. This is building on very serious sources and saying this is somehow the essence of what an Evan is somehow linked to the process of Av and Ben. Now that can't leave the Pshuto Shel Mikra. That's somehow a father and a son. Now we're going to have to link to an Evan itself. And the question is, what's the connection between a stone and a father and a son, or father and children, Avu Banim? What do the two have in common? What would link the two together conceptually? What?
Genes.
I don't think stones have genes yet.
Oh, stones.
Yes?
No, I was just going to say, isn't there also a concept that Evan is an acronym for Av Ben Nechad?
Could be. That's not what Opus and Rashi are saying, but it certainly would work. It's certainly possible. It could be another layer. And definitely fits with the theme of what we're going to be talking about. So, sounds good. But I've never seen it. And Evan and Av and Ben.
Like, the word-wise, I like zoned out for a second, so maybe this is not on track. But like the word, like they're interconnected, like they build each other. So like it's just like
not in terms of how the two link together.
Yeah, but
the two things separately, and
yeah.
A father and children, and an Evan.
It's just like one. Okay, I don't know.
Marissa,
were you going for earth science here?
No.
Okay.
But go for it.
Oh, because how a bunch of smaller rocks form is from a bigger rock that erodes
into smaller rocks.
Yeah.
Interesting. Also. Okay. Good. Yes. Not what I was thinking, but definitely fits. Yeah.
Are we into literature here?
Please say your major before you answer any of the questions. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, because the father is his rock for the son. Too modern.
A little bit. And if it was really modern, it should be AIM, right? Everything's got to be gender neutral.
That's not gender neutral.
So you'd have to put like a mem in the middle of the word Evan. Evmum. What do we, when we think about rocks, what do we think when we think about rocks in terms of what they represent conceptually?
Like solid, consistent, and solid.
Excellent. Stable. Consistent, continuous, eternal. Right? Consistent, continuous, and eternal. That's what an Evan is. One way that we represent that, what minhag do we have that includes an Evan?
Putting it on the gravestone.
Yeah, and this is directly in contrast between ourselves and the non-Jews. What do non-Jews put in front of?
Flowers.
They put flowers, which are alive and beautiful for a moment, but are passing and ephemeral and degrade and end up being nothing. We do the exact opposite. It's always pay attention to these subtle things. They're subtle messages from our culture versus non-Jewish culture. We take an Evan, we take a stone. People don't like it, it's not as pretty. Okay, so pick a pretty stone, that doesn't matter to me, right? But you take a stone and you put it on top. You're saying, no, even though the passing body may be here, the stone represents the fact that this person is eternal. And we're indicating that the most important aspect of this person is their eternal side, is their soul, is their continuation, is the fact that they're going to come back in Tzchiat HaMeitim. Whole different perspective on what we do when we go and visit somebody is we're commemorating and we're celebrating their eternal side. We're not just remembering the person that was. But stones have this aspect to them of continuity, of an eternal side to them. Tof. They're the embodiment of eternity in Klal Yisrael. What is in our minds the concept of eternity within Klal Yisrael also? That symbol for us, which is a symbol that despite the difficulties of 2,000 years, it shows that we're still here and we're still going and we still have hope for the future. Very often, colloquially, it appears in tons of pictures. It's a focal point for where Jews come to and the Kotel, right? The Kotel is made out of stones. That stone wall is very significant to us in that it represents the continuity of Klal Yisrael, the continued hope of Klal Yisrael, as is contained in those avanim. On the one hand, while we always prize life, the more life that there is in an object, the more subject it is to the opposite, to death. On the flip side, the less life there is in an object, the farther away it is from death. So if we look at the different steps, the hierarchy of created things, we have domim, tsomeach, chai, and medaber, inanimate life, plant life, animal life, and human life. The higher up you go, the more life there is in it, the more subject it is to death. What's the least life force in that system?
The stone, like the inanimate.
The inanimate object, right? It definitionally is inanimate. It has no life to it. But therefore, it's totally separated and has no relationship to death. It's eternal. It's continuous. Inside of each and every one of us, what is the strongest of our physical selves, the strongest or most eternal part of ourselves that lasts the longest, that doesn't degrade, that doesn't erode, are our bones. Our bones are the stone-like aspect of ourselves. They don't erode. They don't go away. Bones in Hebrew are atzamot, are bones, but related to the word etzem. What does etzem mean? Etzem means essence. The word for bones and essence are shared. That part of us which maintains and continues on, which doesn't degrade, which has a more eternal side to them, that also is related to our essential side of ourselves. Tov. Yeah, then we'll go back to Avin Bain.
But at the same time, like, don't we associate, like, life, the ability to do mitzvot, the ability to do.
So we're not slamming life. We're not slamming chiyut. But life definitionally is subject to death. Everything has an upside to it. The upside of inanimate objects, the upside of domain, is that it represents eternality because it's not subject to death. Going back to Avin Bein. Yaakov is going out to create Av-Ben relationships. In this parsha alone, he produces 11 out of the 12 Shvatim. 11 out of the 12 Shvatim get produced in this parsha. He, again, produces Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisaskar, Zvulun, Binyamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher. He's producing all of the Shvatim, with one exception. He's producing all of the Shvatim, right? Now think about this Shvat. Think about those names, the name Reuven, the name Gad, the name Shimon, name Levi. What's unique about these names? Think about what the names are, and think about the association we have with them. What's unique about the name Reuven, Levi, Shimon, Yisaskar? What's unique about the names?
They're all feelings.
Feelings. Like, oh, in terms of how they got their names.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, okay. Also true. On the one hand, they're individuals within Klal Yisrael. On the other hand, They're also Shvatim, right? These people who are going to be born in this Parsha, who are going to be the Avanim, the stones that create the Beit Yisrael, have within them, on the one hand, the individual side. On the one hand, there was an individual in history and his name was Reuven. There was an individual in history and his name was Shimon. Those people existed. But they're also Shvatim. These are ongoing groups within Klal Yisrael. Reuven, the individual, may die. And the individuals who even make up the Shevet Reuven will also come and go. But the reality of Reuven, that's eternal. That's eternal. When we talk about Shevet Reuven, we're not just talking about those people who happen to be descendants of the individual Reuven. That's not their only defining characteristic by being part of Shevet Reuven. It's not just, oh, my great-great-great-great-grandfather was Reuven. But on top of that, we're saying that this is a part of the essence of these people themselves. Individuals come and go, but the name remains the same and indicates an essence that's relating to that person as part of that group. Those groups carry on. As my Rebbe put it as well, an individual, and chas v'chalil alino, an individual can achieve, an individual can have a chiyuv karis. An individual can be cut off from Klal Yisrael. But you can't cut off a shevet from Klal Yisrael. You can't cut off an entire part of Klal Yisrael from Klal Yisrael. Those parts are eternal. Individuals come and go. Individuals can opt in or opt out. But those shvatim are eternal. That's the avanim that we're creating, these eternal side that we're creating in the av producing the bein, in the continuity of the generations that we're producing here, in the production of the shvatim. When Yaakov goes out, and hear this, this is coming back and really giving a whole different frame to our parsha. When Yaakov, when Yaakov goes out to create a family in Haran, he's not simply going out to create a family and fulfill the mitzvah of Puruvu. He's also doing that. But what is Yaakov doing? He's producing 12 eternal groups that go on and are not dependent upon the individuals that make them up. There's one more name in Sefer Bereishit other than the Shvatim that's eternal. What other name is there in Sefer Bereishit other than the names of the Shvatim themselves that's eternal?
Yosef.
He's a Shevet? What?
Yisrael.
Excellent. Yaakov is going to be renamed Yisrael, and the name Yisrael is also eternal. Yaakov will be transformed into Yisrael. And the Gemara tells us in Masechet Ta'anit, Daf Hei Amud Bet, it's a crazy Gemara, and the Gemara itself argues and tries to understand what it means. Hachi Amar of Yochanan, relatively well-known Gemara. Yaakov Avinu Lomet. Yaakov Avinu doesn't die. Now the Gemara immediately responds, what are you talking about? There was a hesped, he was embalmed, he had a burial, he had a funeral service, of course he died. What's the Gemara hinting to? What's the Gemara trying to say? Is that when Yaakov becomes Yisrael, he achieves an eternal status, that even though he may come and go also, he is going to be eternal. Yisrael is going to be eternal. And in fact, my Rebbe didn't quote this, but if you take the Gemara to its end point in that sugya over there, hear the end of the Gemara. Why is Yaakov eternal, says the Gemara? I'm adding this in, but I believe it's Pashut from the text and what Rebbe was building. Mekish hu lezaro. It quotes verses that make an equation between Yaakov, the individual, and his descendants. And that's why we can say Yaakov vino lomit. Everything we're talking about in terms of Evan and Avin Ben. Ma zaro bechayim, afhu bechayim. He lives through the continuous generations that come out of him because he lives on as Yisrael. Because Yisrael lives on, so he too lives on. That's what we're saying. Yaakovinu is linked to life. That's essentially to who he is. And just like we say Yaakov or Yisrael, lo mate, what then also is lo mate, if we're talking about Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, what? Klal Yisrael as a whole, meaning Yisrael the individual, who's the prototype for Yisrael as a whole, I'm just rephrasing your words, yeah. Yisrael the individual, who's a prototype for Yisrael the whole also, lo mate, they are eternal, they can never go away. They're linked to life. They're intrinsically linked to life. Generations may come and go, but Yisrael will continue on. This is the promise of Yaakov over Yisrael, of ongoing life, of eternity. And this is contrasted, just to link back concepts from the last parsha that we did, just to show you how all this stuff comes back again and again and again. Who are we going to contrast Yaakov and Yisrael to?
Esav.
Esav, who we said again and again in the Toldot Shirim, that he's all about anger, about killing, about death. He defines himself as Hineni Holech Lamut. I'm going toward death. My whole reality is going toward death. Hineni Holech Lamut, he says at the beginning of Parsha Toldot. V'lama zeh li bechora? Why do we need a bechora? Why do we need bracha? Why do we need continuation? Hineni Holech Lamut. I'm going toward death. Through the production of his descendants in Edom, and as we talked about in Christianity, what does Christianity claim? Yisrael, you're not eternal. It's over. Yisrael is over, and we're starting fresh. You weren't really eternal. You do have a tzad of death to you. And here's the New Testament, the new Judaism, the new Christianity. They claim to try and stop that eternal side. They try to combat that eternal side of Yaakov, of Israel. And then they also, again, very physically try to end us as a people in tremendous difficulties across the generations. Coming back to our inyanim. So Yaakovinu does not just go out to Haran to build a family. He goes out to build stones, blocks, avanim, out of which will come forth the bayit of Klal Yisrael. Yeah, we'll stop here. We'll pause here, and then meaning Kilu, there's two more points I want to make, and then we'll wrap up. But take questions first.
It's just two things. Could this also be related back to what we were saying at Toldot, like the living on of the legacy?
100%.
And also, so what do you do with the fact that there are no Shvatim? Like, we don't identify ourselves.
How we have to deal with the 10 lost tribes and the Shvatim there is a complicated Gemara. There are different opinions there and how we work that out. So, not for this particular moment, but definitely the right question for this discussion. Yes. Okay. What was the other? Was there another hand up? Was another hand? Or not? Okay. So, taking it one last step. Two more steps forward. We have two more steps to go. Here we go. Watch this. Okay, Tov. Last week we did, we even recapped before we started shir today. Last week we defined Yaakovinu corresponding to what part of the body?
Spine.
The spine. At what point does the spine split out and spread out? Where?
The legs.
Split out and spread out, the spine itself. Not extend, spread out. Physically in the body.
Nervous.
The ribs, yeah. Sherry, good, well done. Ribs, yeah, there they are, right? The ribs. So Ravamos pointed this out, that he did not see this written anywhere per se, but he said he was struck by it when he was talking to a doctor, and the number struck him. How many ribs do we have? 12 ribs, 6 on each side. Meaning Yaakov, who is the spine, extends itself into 12 ribs, which are the
so weird.
Which are extending out. Which are extending out.
My brain.
Which are extending out as the extensions of that central spine of Klal Yisrael and becoming the ribs. Now, what function do the ribs serve in the body?
They protect the organs.
They protect the integral organs of life. The lungs, the heart and soul of the body. Which in fact perfectly mirrors as how we end up in the desert with which end up as a mishkan in the middle, and we have four encampments all around of the 12 Shvatim in the desert, as we're going to see in Sefer Bamidbar, right? So in the center is the mishkan, and what do we say? What's the verse that we always quote and sing in these parshiot?
Something about
art. Bilvavi mishkan evne. Meaning the lave of Klal Yisrael, the lave of the heart and soul of the core of Klal Yisrael is the Mishkan, is the Beit HaMikdash, is the Mishkan. The Mishkan existing in the middle, the heart in the center, being surrounded by and protected by the 12 Shvatim in their four encampments. Literally, the life force, the lifeblood of Klal Yisrael, or every individual is being protected by those 12 ribs, is being protected by those 12 pieces, which are guarding the heart and soul of Klal Yisrael, that Mishkan that exists inside every single one of us. And physically in the structure of Klal Yisrael. This is how the Machaneh Shechina looks and how Kal Yisrael itself organizes. Everybody see that?
It's the heart and soul of what?
Say again?
The Mishkan is the heart and soul
of Kal Yisrael. That's where it's getting its lifeblood from, which we talked about the Beit HaMikdash. We'll get to it in Sefer Bamidbar, but the Kal Yisrael breaks down into four encampments.
And what does that have to do with?
It doesn't do with the 12. I'm just saying, this is literally what the structure looks like in Bamidbar.
Okay.
Is four, but the point is they're creating a circle or guarding the center point, which is the Mishkan. That's the important piece. What the Degalim are and the encampments. So in fall 2017, we'll talk. Fall 2016, we'll talk about Sefer Midbar. 2016. Okay, Tov. Last piece is, you know, we made a reference, and I want to link it back in. We made a reference to the fact that the bones, the atzimot of a person, are like the eternal side of that person. They're the hardest part of the person. They're ki'ilu like the bone, like the rocks of the person themselves. There's a singular part of the body, one piece of the body that is the eternal part of the physical body. Does anybody know, Afi Chazal, what part of the body is eternal, cannot be broken? We'll go on. You call it out?
The loose bone?
The what?
The loose bone?
The loose bone is actually what it's called, yes. You heard about the loose bone. So let's pour a little bit of content into the loose bone. So first of all, fascinating that he who represents... Where is the loose bone?
Right here.
The very top of the spine.
Oh my God! I can't.
I don't know if it's good or bad, I can't.
No, it's good. It's just crazy how it's happening.
Okay. Yes, welcome to an intentional world. So we have a spine. At the top of the spine is the loose bone. The loose bone is the part of the person that's eternal, where Tchiyat HaMetim is going to come from. That's Mefurash Medrash. The Medrash says in Bereishit Rabbah, Parsha Chafchet Gimel, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya Amarle, Mehechan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzit Ta'adam La'atid Lavo, from where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu going to allow a person to sprout forth and rebuild himself La'atid Lavo in the world to come? Amarle, Miluz Shel Sidra, from the loose bone of the spine. That is, first of all, a bone, not only just a bone, the very top or the source of the spine. That's where Tchiyat HaMetim is going to come from. That's where the source of eternal life is going to come from. And not only that, but the loose bone, according to Chazal as well, just like a rock is eternal, the loose bone, says Chazal, understand it as you will, is indestructible. Chazal says as follows. It's in the same measure. Sorry, we'll quote a different Gemara in a second. Amar Levi, Nayin Atzay Yodea. How do you know this? Amar Le Atzay Ledei Ana Modilah. Give me one, and I'll show it to you. So they put it in a mill, and they weren't able to grind it. They sarfu be'esh v'lo nisraf. They threw it in the fire, and it wouldn't burn. They put it in the mime and in the water, and it wouldn't disintegrate. And they took and they put it on a base, and they took a hammer and tried to smash it. And says the Midrash, it's right here in front of me, you can see the words inside. That when they tried to smash it, the thing that was underneath it snapped in two, and the hammer exploded into pieces, but the loose bone remained intact. The Medrash is indicating to us that the loose bone is somehow the beginning of Tzchiyat HaMetim. It's the beginning of the eternal side of a person, and it's that continuous part of a person. Moreover, in a separate Gemara, Medrash and Gemara are the same people, it's all Chazal, but in a different Gemara it says, in terms of, about Luz, that Luz is also the name of a place, which we know anyway, because what place does somebody identify as Luz? Who said that? Beit El and Luz are the same place, meaning the place where Yaakov Avinu has the dream is called Luz. It's where he begins his journey, is called Luz. And that becomes Beit El, the place of God. That place is also representing that eternal space. But there was a place called Luz historically. And the Gemara says in Masechet Sota, Daf Mem Vav Amebet, He Luz, Sheba Samcher V'lo Bil Bala, that Samcher was unable to mix around the people in Luz. It would need it to be consistent, eternal. Nebuchadnezzar Lohech Riva, Nebuchadnezzar came, he wasn't able to destroy it. And it even says, and understand this wherever you like, V'af Malach HaMavet, Ain lo reshut la'avor ba. The Malach HaMavet has no connection to this place. It couldn't go over this place. The place called Luz, this reality of Luz, there's no shlita of death. It's pure life. So much so that el zekinim shabab is man shda'atan katsa lehen yotzin chutz lechoma v'hemitin. That when people would get old enough, they'd realize, okay, you know what? It's time. My time has come. It's my time to pass on to the next world. What would they do? They'd have to leave the city limits in order for them to then pass away, because they wouldn't be able to die in the place of Luz. Before Shkemar, this is Chazal. Chazal in Masechet Sota are saying, are indicating to us the eternal side that is the luz, that is the top of the spine, that's the place where Yaakovinu is having this dream, where Yaakovinu is starting his journey off from, all of these things unfolding back into each other, about this way of going out, creating the eternal building blocks of Klal Yisrael in the Avanim, the Avbein, the Evan, creating those Avanim, creating the eternal aspects of Klal Yisrael in the prototypes, the Shvatim, which will then become the Banim, who will become the Shvatim, those eternal pieces. Yaakov himself is lo meit and will be the prototype of the eternal side of Klal Yisrael. All of these coming together in the spine, with the ribs, in the loose bone, in the place of loose, and all of these things coming together to produce a reality of eternality, life, continuity, of which Yaakov is going out to build. That's what he's being by Yitzhak too. Yaakov is going out to build the eternal side of Klal Yisrael. That's his goal. And we'll start adding more content to that, Bezrat Hashem, next time.